This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Episode 201. What did you watch this week? My name is Mike.
My name is John.
I sound a little funny.
You sound a little tired / mellow. Okay. Like the edibles have kicked in.
Never taken an edible in my life, for the record, or done any type of drugs.
Yeah, you have.
No, I haven't.
Now that we're pain pills.
Now that we're prescribed to me by a doctor.
Okay, there you go.
Nothing recreational. So I pretty much gave up on the good doctor as well. There was no catalyst. I just decided, you know what, I'm not going to watch this. And I deleted it from my feed.
I don't blame you at all, considering that I bailed on it first. But yeah.
Hey, The Rookie returns tonight.
It does.
You know, we are recording on Sunday the 23rd of February because I'm not going to be able to record tomorrow.
Yes, but you probably won't see this episode for a little while because my laptop's dead and Mike's going to be indisposed tomorrow, so we'll figure it out. It'll get up somehow, but.
But yeah, so I'm excited to watch The Rookie when I can. And we have Doctor Who, the part one of the two-part season finales tonight. I'm not going to watch either until I have them both to watch.
Which I'll be honest, I didn't even watch last week's yet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I was under the misguided assumption that last week's was part one, because I kept seeing all this stuff show up in my feed about Cybermen, and I'm like, oh, make sure not to watch that. And then they're like, oh, tonight's part one. I'm like, God damn it.
Yeah, last week was there was a tie-in with, you know, the famous night where, like, Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein and her other friends all told horror stories. Yeah. And it was them visiting that night for some reason. There was some anomaly, and so they went there to stop in, and stuff happened. So I won't talk about it anymore. But yeah, I just kind of decided, you know, The Good Doctor, wasn't going to watch it. I just didn't care about it. The wife said, hey, there's four episodes of Manifest on there. You might as well just delete that because no one's watching that. So even though she tried to put it over to us how great the show is.
You're all looking at me.
You know, she was literally just full of shit and being contrary to be contrary.
John knew I was full of shit the whole time.
Oh, I didn't believe you for 1 second.
You're right. You weren't sure.
Anything else? Is there anything you've kicked loose?
I was trying to think about that. I don't think presently, although there were a few things that I was looking at on my DVR going, do I really want to? Like, I know that I've got four episodes right now on my DVR of Project Blue Book.
Yeah.
Because that came back.
But yes.
I'm looking at it and I'm like, four episodes. God, that's a commitment. So I'm considering that one. Although I did get a bit of a shock, that show that I really like, Kidding, you know, with Jim Carrey and Judy Greer, that came back and it's been back for four episodes and my DVR wasn't recording it. So I binged those four. Still a great show.
I haven't decided if I want to keep watching Lock and Key.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
After this week's episode?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about it.
Oh, okay. Well,
since we're right there.
Kate and I watched that together.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Last week when you were talking, you were talking about how, like, kid-orientated it is, and it's got the kid lead, and...
Well, until Echo threw a kid in front of a moving subway this week.
Right, yes.
She just kind of opened up the door, and he's like, cool, and she grabbed the key and flung him seconds before the train just mowed him over.
He said the key was a lighter, so it wasn't even a real key.
But you notice that the building burned down.
Yes.
So, obviously, the key does something like sets fires.
Okay. Yeah, but
I thought that house was the house where the guy stuck the key in his heart and the house set on fire. Isn't that the house that she...
Oh, maybe that is the key the kid
had.
Yeah,
so that's what the key is, and he said it's basically a lighter, so...
Oh.
Yeah. What would be the purpose of that? Like,
I don't know.
Why would you want a key that when you stick it in someone, everything around them bursts into flames?
I guess like, you're going to have to keep watching to find out.
Like, you'd have to run.
I think the little brother just pisses me off or annoys me.
Oh, he is such a little twat, isn't he?
You know, like, hey, we have these dangerous keys. You know, you're keeping your, you know, like, and all these bad things happen, and mom can't remember them, so don't go looking for these keys without us, okay?
Okay. And we're going to hold on to these keys for safekeeping.
Yeah.
Because we're older and we're more intelligent. What's the first thing he does? I found a new key.
I'm going to use it while no one's around.
And turn into a ghost. This will be neat. Look, my body's just laying there comatose on the floor like I'm dead. I'm going to go fly.
Right. Like, I don't know.
Right upside the head.
So I'm not sure.
Kids, John.
Well, everybody knows that. Like, that'd be like me saying that you like Mike.
Right.
You know?
Right. I want to walk
in now. Okay. Whoa. I feel like we got to a different level there.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's positive. Like, I don't know.
Maybe I should have said that'd be like saying you need glasses. Should I have gone for something that was more like...
His analogy is... John doesn't like kids like you like me because you married me and you were just like, oh, yeah.
Well, okay, awesome. Then.
Awesome. Feeling great.
I bet.
But again, I don't.
Yeah.
I'm just on the fence.
Oh, that's the thing is, like, I really liked seeing that escalate like that. I was just like, holy crap, she just literally.
And it was the very PG way of throwing someone in front of a train. They land in the tracks. A train goes by. There's no screaming. There's no blood flying everywhere. The train, you know, like, I wouldn't think they slammed the brakes on it. Maybe the horn would go off. Because it's not like he and the train impact at the same time. He hit the tracks, then the train. You think the horn, no brakes, I get. But the horn, screaming, some blood.
Right.
The other kids are just like, ooh, and they run away. Not even like, you just killed my friend. Like. Right. It was, you know, it's like, oh, I guess that kid's dead now. You know what I mean?
You know,
like,
what I think would be better, honestly, is if they didn't have these as keys, but they had them as superpowers. You know, like the show Heroes. Because, like, on its own, that key where she can just look at a laptop and see a house and then go over and open up a door and she teleports there, that's a really cool power, you know?
Yeah.
By itself. Or when they actually... dug into his head and we're like, who cares? It's a fucking arcade. And oh, he had a memory of dad telling him a story. But then when his sister goes inside her head and actually finds her fear and confronts her fear and then drags it
and
out.
Murders her fear at the end of the movie. At the end of the
Shallow and Mark Grieve. You know, I'm like, that could be a really cool thing on its own.
Right.
You know, something that allows you. But the fact that they're just kind of like rushing through and mushing all this stuff. Now we've got the fucking Casper key. And that's Casper the Friendly Ghost.
I know what you meant.
Yeah. Not the mattress, which some, you know, millennials might be listening and going, dude, why is it a mattress key?
Fucking millennials. I don't actually mean that.
I'm trying to say, I've got some notes here, just making sure that I covered everything that... it was pretty freaky watching, you know, some of their memories leading up to the kid who murdered their dad.
Yeah.
Like, like Kinsey hiding in the... You know, under
the
area.
Under
the dining table.
It was under the dining table with the plastic, but of course, when we see it, it looks maximized.
Which was really cool.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's a memory thing. But also the, what was it? When Tyler's sitting there talking to the kid, and the kid's like, oh, I feel like I should just kill my dad. He's such an asshole. And Tyler's like, if you ever do that,
kill mine first.
Yeah. And the kid's like, okay. And then later on, he did. So.
The mom looking at the yearbook and seeing the Omega symbol all through it, and then that she remembers that the kid that killed her husband and shot her had the Omega symbol tattooed on his arm.
Yep. And the woman that she was talking to in the diner, and she said, you know, oh, yeah, he said there's some woman down in the well that's talking to him. And she's like,
yeah.
Woman in the well? Like, she knew something, obviously. Right. So, yeah.
But then when she went to the well, she was saying, what, Frank?
Yeah. Yeah. So...
Yeah,
I don't know.
Um, Yeah, I think it was Frank.
It's funny. So
to her, someone else in the well.
Right. So this week, you're like, I want less to do with Lock and Key. I'm actually like, I want to see more. So it's interesting that we kind of flip-flopped like that.
Yeah. Fair enough. October Faction?
Yes.
One of my biggest gripes about the show was I thought the kids were going to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing all the little things happen to the kids. And it just seems like a really slow burn to get to the point where the kids know what's going on and everything else. And it's just, there's been moments in these first four episodes I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost like they took an episode of television and stretched it out to four episodes.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
You know, finally at the end of this episode, you know, the kids find out, oh shit, what's going on? They don't get the story, but they know now their moms don't work. Their mom and dad are not insurance agents.
Right.
They have lots of weapons. They're hunting, you know, like, you know what I mean?
There's an alarm system going off inside this old house.
Yeah. Like, there's this
inside of a panic room.
There's this panic. Yeah. There's this vault that has all these weird artifacts in it or these weird things, whatever, you know, the kids think that is, but it's like finally, okay, they're going to get revealed to what's actually happening, what's actually going on.
So there was some interesting stuff here that I've got questions about, and okay. maybe this was explained, I just missed it. So first off, the episode prior to this where Dolores got jumped by the biker gang of vampires.
Yes.
And she survived that. Yes. Like, she was bloody and beaten.
Yes.
But she survived it, and she didn't kill all the other vamps because something else killed them later.
They must have – some of them must have gotten away is what I assume.
So this world's vamps – don't kill people? Because it seems like there were enough of them that they would have killed her. And the reason that this becomes even more of a question for me is because in the beginning of this episode, we got another flashback like we seem to get. And this was that young Dolores got stabbed in the gut by a vamp.
Oh.
And the doctor was like, I'm so sorry, and walked out of the room. And her and Fred were talking, and They were like, well, you know, we shouldn't have kids in a world like this. You know, it'd be irresponsible, blah, blah, blah.
So maybe she inherited some supernatural powers or strength.
Maybe.
And so, like, the vampires couldn't kill her?
I thought maybe she became a vampire. Like, maybe she's one of them. But
maybe.
And maybe that's why the kids have their powers, in air quotes.
It's weird that the only creatures that we're seeing are vampires, but they look like different types of creatures.
But they mentioned ghouls in this one.
Yeah, they did mention
ghouls. He did mention a nest of ghouls. And they said that October is always the worst leading up to Halloween.
Yeah.
So I had those questions. Otherwise, you're right. It's very slow burning. Jeff and his ghost buddy that like convinced the whole party at the house thing, that is so overdone. I'm so tired.
Yeah, that was excessive. They had the party at the house, and the place got trashed, like, every friggin' room from top to bottom. Yeah.
Yeah, and you had the teenagers that were literally, like, on that desk just plowing away at each other.
Right.
While people were walking in and picking up stuff. And, hey, I gotta grab that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bit over the top. And maybe that's how high school is really like, and we just don't know because we didn't, you know.
Go there?
Go to parties like that.
Yeah. I know I didn't. I'm pretty sure you didn't.
No, I didn't. I wasn't a party goer.
That reminded me, and I was going to ask you something, and I can't remember what it was.
Does that have to do with October Faction?
I don't know. It's gone now.
Okay. So, speaking of slow burn.
Yeah.
The Outsider. There's only three episodes left.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to get through all three of them.
I'll watch them.
Oh, my God.
But I completely understand where you're coming from.
Did you feel like the car ride there, like we had missed something? Because suddenly they're in the car and they're driving like they were at the end of last episode, but she's talking to him and he's like, you know, what do you think is going to happen to me? And she's like, I'm going to try to help you. I'm going to try to fix you.
Well, that was quite a ways into the episode.
It was, but it was like the first time we really got to communicate with them.
Sorry.
Thank God it wasn't porn.
Yeah, well, it was. I put it on Netflix. I accidentally hit the Netflix thing, and I did the automatic. Gotcha. I put it on Netflix. I accidentally hit my Netflix shit thing at the top. I don't know what I'm
shit thing.
Button. There we go. My brain's a bit blech. So anyhow, Yeah, I guess you're right. I do kind of feel like right from the get-go, they were in the car, and it's almost like he's like, well, you know what I am.
Yeah.
Oh, because at the end of the episode, she'd seen the bumps on the back of his neck, and so I think there must have been some sort of conversation. So, yeah, it did open
up. That's what it is. I think we missed her being, the conversation of that.
Yeah, they just skipped over that because maybe it was going to be too slow.
I was glad that the wife and what's her name, Dottie, or
yeah, whatever,
that they were both like, all right, enough is enough. You need to stop pretending that the most outrageous thing in front of you isn't real because it's real.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, they basically said, look, Ralph, cut the shit.
Yeah.
You need to accept that this is what it is.
Yeah.
I did appreciate that.
And then Bateman's wife there is now going to sue everybody because, you know, fuck it. What else has she got to lose? The whole town hates her. Yeah. Everyone looks at her like she's a demon. So fuck it. I'll just piss everybody off. I like how she's like, well, the corrections department was supposed to protect him, so I should sue them. And her lawyer's like, who else? She goes, who else is there?
Yeah.
He just starts listing them off. She's like, what about the court? Well, that would be the court grounds. Okay, we'll sue them. What about the police department? Like, she's just going off. And then he's like, well, what about the other people who were like your friends who were just kind of involved? Yeah, let me think on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, we're going to sue everybody else.
Yep. You know, the worst part is that this was never touted as a limited miniseries like Watchmen was.
Yeah.
This is just season one. So I can't imagine. Oh, I just realized that, like you had mentioned a couple episodes back, I still haven't started watching The Sinner season three.
I haven't either.
I'll probably watch it when it comes on Netflix.
Yeah.
Because you know it won't be long. Like, once it ends, it'll be like a week.
And I think that's probably what I'm going to do, too, wait for it to be on Netflix.
Yeah, because I don't want to. USA doesn't come in very good on my box, as I mentioned with Mr. Robot.
So. Yeah. No, so this episode did start out well and kind of a little bit fast-paced. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's like, oh, good, the action's finally picking up. And it was mostly just, you know, them trying to find where Holly was.
Right.
So doing police work, tracking things down, you know, going different locations, you know, just everything else that was happening. So it started out really well, like the first like 10, 15 minutes. And then it just went, and I was like, you know, and then like he got away from her so easily. Like, oh, we have to stop. Why? I have to go to the bathroom. We'll go to the bathroom to get there. I have to stop. Okay. Okay, lady.
And then the way that they like played out the most painful interaction, the most overused painful interaction. He's like, why are you taking your bag? She's like, because I need something. He goes, there's toilet paper in there. Well, I need something else. What do you need? Are you going to make me spell it out? What do you need? I'm having my period.
Yeah.
Okay. Really? Did we really have to do that?
Yep. And she heads into the bathroom, and then apparently she knew the whole time he was going to get out of the car and go around to the back side. So when she broke the window, he would run over there, and then she'd run out the front door.
Yeah.
And then he'd be like, hey, I got the keys. No, I got the other set. And then she sped away, and then that was it. She got away.
Yep, that was it. Bye.
And then, you know, they find her phone broken, and you know, they go to the restaurant or the store, whatever. They find the phone broken, this and that. And then it cuts to her back at that office telling what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, she just, oh, the one time that the show decided not to drag out and show us every part of the process.
So, yeah, this has been a very slow burn show as well.
Mm-hmm.
And with three episodes left, I'm going to watch the three episodes.
I'd like to say, I mean, honestly, like, I saved this one till the last minute today, and I was like, fuck, I guess I gotta watch it.
Yeah, you should have watched Doctor Who.
Yeah, I think I should have.
Ugh. Sticking with HBO, I did not watch Avenue 5.
Okay. You're not missing much.
I don't know if I am.
It's really dry, you know, I know that it's British humor, and It's a satirical dark comedy. I mean, there was one funny thing, which was, you know, the smarmy guy there who has like the baby face with almost the crossed eyes. He was on The Office and stuff. Like at one point they're all doing this stuff and a video of him pops up saying, hey, congratulations. We're at the halfway point of our, you know, now we're going to make the turn and go home. And everyone's like, is that true? And he's like, no, not even close. It was funny in the context, but otherwise, eh. They fixed the ship problem. So that's all set. Yeah.
Glad they fixed the ship problem.
Yeah. I will say this, though.
Yes.
Since we're on the subject of HBO, I was pleasantly surprised this afternoon to discover that now they do have all episodes available for McMillions on demand.
Well, I'm going to be out of work the next couple of weeks, convalescing.
Yep.
And I have a list of things I may or may not watch. Depends on how I feel. I may be sleepy the whole time.
Yeah.
I do want to check that McMillions out.
I watched the first episode tonight before I came over here.
Yes.
And it is definitely not the type of thing you want to wait a week in between. It's like a true crime podcast.
Nice.
I will say already the FBI agent that was in charge of this is a dick.
Oh, good.
He's a cocky, smarmy dick. Like, he spends most of his time as he's talking, he's like, that kind of shit's boring. Like, I don't want to interview people. That's boring. I don't want to do that bullshit. I want to get out there. I want to do some action. I want to have some fun. And he sounds like a frat boy. And this is legitimately the guy who was heading up the investigation. So, yeah, that part pisses me off. But the rest of it, I'm, like, glued already.
Hmm. I'll check it out.
Yeah.
I may see if Kate wants to watch it. She likes it. She likes true crime
podcasts. I think she'd like it.
Nice. Oh, Flash?
Yeah.
It was great when he did that one time.
I know. Flash. Yeah, I have some notes on Flash.
So I watched this episode.
Okay. That's it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Iris is in the mirror world.
Yeah.
Spends way too much time in the mirror world.
Yeah.
I saw an article that the title was showrunner talks about the increased presence of Iris in this season of Flash. And I said, oh, do tell. And he basically was skirting around the issue and saying, she's grown so much as a person. And Candace has said to us, you know, that she wants to see more of her, less of her just being a wife or, you know, married to the Flash, and more of her as an individual and a reporter. And I totally get that.
Mm-hmm.
The show's called The Flash.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's kind of The Flash.
Yeah. Old age, Mallrats commentary. It's called Mallrats. Get the kids to the fucking mall.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
The original 26-minute opening, they're not at the mall.
Right.
No.
So as much as I do enjoy what they're doing, I think that they've gone in the opposite direction. Like, it seems like every week they come up with a new reason for Barry not to be in the suit.
Right.
You know, last week it was because Amunet said, oh, if I see the Flash anywhere around, if I see your suit, then I'm going to tell everybody your secret identity. So he had to stay out of his suit the whole time and couldn't speed around. What was the excuse this week? I can't even remember what it was, but...
No, there wasn't. He just wasn't in the episode.
Yeah.
It was about Iris and Eva in the mirror world and what's going on with them.
Yeah.
And then...
Ralph and Sue.
And him finding, like at the opening there with Ralph and Joe's wife. And he's like, oh, I'm just so sad that this is the person I've been looking for and I can't find him. Oh, and then he finds him immediately.
Mm.
And, oh, they're a piece of shit.
Yeah.
They're going to team up against this bad guy, but he's not really the bad guy. Maybe he is, but she's still going to steal. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It's just.
And in the comics, that's his wife.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. That's okay. Sue Dibney.
Oh.
Eventually. So I don't know if they're going that route. Me personally, I suppose I can't really speak for this because I do actually have a bad history with. Anyway. Me personally. I'm just going to say, if a woman treated me like that, you know, and used me and tried to get her own ends and screwed me over like that, I think I probably wouldn't find her romantically attractive.
No, I wouldn't.
I think I'd have a problem with that, and it would interfere with my ability to see her as anything other than a nemesis.
Yep, I agree.
So,
yeah. Joe and Barry investigating a mole inside Central City PD.
Oh, yeah. So, and Barry had a stack of paperwork to do.
Yes.
That's right. Yes. And then we've got that whole weird thing with Nash Wells seeing Harry Wells.
Yes.
Like a ghost or something. And he has the diary. Okay. First off, sorry, it's not first off. What is with this show and putting giant labels on everything? Like the mirror gun had a giant, like somebody actually embossed that on metal and stamped it on the box. Mirror gun.
Well, they wanted to make sure they knew what it was.
Yeah, but you've got other guns that were sitting out on the shelves, like on display. They didn't have their own guns.
Were they mirror guns?
No, they weren't, because I didn't have the label that said it. Well, it's just like, you know, he turns over the book and it says, The Diary of Harrison, quote unquote, Harry Wells, in giant letters on the front.
Hey, he wanted to know whose it belonged to so they wouldn't read it.
No, that means Harry actually had to have that created for him, or somebody gave it to him as a gift. And he was like, I'm going to put pen to paper. It was.
Yeah, they do that.
Okay. Black hole. It's a thing. Moving on.
I didn't watch Supergirl or Batwoman. Am I missing out?
Batwoman, I just want to scream. Supergirl was actually not bad because we still had Wynn back here from the future. And there's nothing really like earth-shattering that you would need to know for continuity's sake.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about the stuff going on in the future, things like that. But, yeah, Batwoman is just pissing me off because they've got those two Beths. Yeah. And now they're both having the crippling headaches and nosebleeds and ear bleeds because, you know, two of them can't exist at the same time. So they're both going to die. And then they discover that, you know, there's the miracle cure, blah, blah, blah. And so they give it to Beth, not Alice. And Kate sits with Alice as she dies. But she doesn't quite die because just as she's about to die, somebody shoots Beth and kills her. And so when she dies, then Alice is like, well, I'm okay now. I don't have to die because, you know, now there's only one of me. Yeah. And it's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, makes me not want to watch that at all.
Oh, please don't.
Legends. So Sarah had to go away to Central City for unknown reasons.
Because their budget didn't cover her costs.
I guess.
Week.
So Ava's going to run the show. And
it's called a ship.
Run the ship. She's going to be captaining the ship. And they're going to go back to France because Marie Antoinette's an echo. Sorry, an encore.
Encore. Yes.
And Zari?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She gets to come in handy now and actually use some of her
Yeah, because she says, she's like, a party is a party.
Yeah.
Or an event is an event. And just basically barrels her way in there. He's like, not the other people. She's like, is my purse going to carry itself?
So essentially, Marie Antoinette's back, and she has this perfume that's powered that she sprays, and it makes people like her and do what she wants them to do. She'll be able to suggest them to do things, and people are eating and partying themselves to death. They're not sleeping. They're not doing anything. Eventually, their bodies just give out and die.
Napoleon is not marching.
No. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So essentially the legends have to use their skills to figure it out. They get Marie Antoinette in her head, which is separated from her body, which is hilarious.
That was pretty funny.
Back on the ship. Oh, and it looks like Nora.
Yes.
It's the actress that plays Nora, and it looks like Nora. Once they get her back on the ship, Zari figures out that the perfume is what was the powerful thing. And she looks into her own future to find out that her perfume is apparently going to kill people's senses so they can't smell anything.
Which is what prevented her and Ava from succumbing to Marie's.
And so it's going to destroy her influencer rating and her empire and everything else. So she takes that perfume from Marie Antoinette and goes to her launch party. But she uses too much of it and people become obsessed with her and the legends have to come in to save the day. And Zari does make a good point. You know, like, you have her locked up for what she did. I did the same thing. And you just said, it's okay. And Ava was like, no, she killed people. You didn't.
Right.
Everyone makes mistakes.
Yeah.
And, you know, Zari and Ava become friends over it. The funny Constantine story is essentially...
The Constantine story I liked.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, then I'll let you explain that one. You can probably explain it better.
Basically, Constantine...
I liked it as well.
He was fighting a poltergeist.
Yes.
And Gary...
That's who was in that room that he had locked.
Yeah. And Gary incanted to try to help him and ended up the door handle off the door, giving the poltergeist the way to get out. But it turns out that the poltergeist was the woman that he had tried to save. It's this whole big... love story slash convoluted story where it's Astra's story where she was working with John and loving John. And there was a car accident. He tried to bring someone back. You know, he fucked things up and then wouldn't take responsibility for it. Was the big thing that the Poltergeist hated, was the fact that he wouldn't take responsibility for it. And he was acting like, you know, well, it could have happened, blah, 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 you know, her time. And he's finally having to come to grips with it. Meanwhile, while he's dealing with all this stuff, watching the memories, you know, watching the day that the guy asked him, you know, please bring her back, watching, you know, the last time that he was with Astra before she walked out, all those things, he's dealing with all this stuff. We also see that Astra is getting reined in down in hell. Like the powers that be are like, hey, stop betting so much. You're going to lose. You've already lost two souls. And she's like, well, Constantine's fucking stuff up. And they're like, then do something about it. So she takes the medallion that she has, takes it to the woman who created it. And the woman's like, hey, Constantine has 10 more years before the lung cancer is going to take him. And she's like, I want him dead now. So the woman says, look, I'm going to call on you later on for a favor, and you're going to do it. In the meantime, and she takes a little screwdriver and basically gives him 10 years worth of lung cancer all at once.
Which ends him, which is essentially saying he's going to die.
Yep.
So,
And we also discovered, really not sure where they're going with this, if this is going to be like a MacGuffin or if it's going to be like the focus of the next season. But it turns out that Charlie is old, and was there to destroy the Loom of Fate. You know, the three old hags back in the Greek myths that, you know, would stretch the threads of people and determine their fates and such. Yeah, she was there for that and destroyed it and split up the pieces across the multiverse. But now she feels like something's coming looking for her.
I think it's funny that Constantine has lung cancer when we've actually never seen him smoke.
I know.
Because every time he's going to light up, something happens and he doesn't.
Yeah.
He has a cigarette in his mouth a lot, or a cigarette over his ear a lot. No actual smoking.
Right.
Happens.
Because, you know, it's TV and kids are impressionable.
Yeah. So I find that funny.
But all in all, not a bad episode.
We have the backstory, the little bee, the little C story, which is my favorite part, which is Rory. And he's at the he's in the medical chair because he doesn't feel good. And he goes, I think she gave me sex disease. I don't know what he said.
An STD.
STD. Okay.
Yeah.
I think she gave me an STD because I'm not feeling well and da 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 da. And the ship scans him and it's like, no, those are emotions.
Yeah, she's like, I have to tell him that you do actually like her, like her.
Yes, you do like her, like her.
Yeah.
He's like, so I just thought that was hilarious. No, Rory, those are emotions.
Right.
That's what's wrong with you.
Yep. The little stomach ache. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to keep up with Flash.
Yep.
I'm probably not going to watch Supergirl or Batwoman. And I'm definitely watching Legends.
Yeah.
It's the best show of them all now.
Legends is great.
I am looking forward to the new Superman series because I do love me some Superman, so I will check that out.
Yeah. So let's see. That covers that and that.
I watched the two episodes of New Amsterdam I hadn't watched yet.
Yeah.
So those were on TV.
What'd you think?
I don't know. I had a real problem with him trying to cut the budget without cutting things and people and this and that. And so he sends, like, okay. One way to save some money is to send, when he talks about, you know, oh, all your bypasses you're going to do tomorrow, we're going to delay them because the ones from the United States that we can order or whatever, the ones we usually order cost, you know, this much, and if we get the ones from Mexico instead, it's going to cost this much. Why don't we just ship them to Mexico and have them have surgery there? Oh, you know, right? It's probably cheaper to do that. So that's what we're going to do. And so he sends his head of, you know, the head of cardio surgery, whatever, and all his patients to Mexico, apparently the next day or that day, to have these heart transplants put in. These heart, you know what I mean? Like, these fake hearts put in or whatever it is.
Here's a funny story about that.
Yeah.
So I was watching Last Week Tonight with John Oliver.
Yeah.
Last week, and he was talking about Medicare for All and what it would really encompass, right, and blah, blah, blah. One of the things they were talking about, and this was legitimate,
yeah,
is that there's an insurance company in Utah that has discovered that it is cheaper for them, okay, instead of paying for their clients' medications, instead of insuring, right, them that way, it is cheaper for them to book them a flight to Southern California, have them drive over the border to Mexico, get their medications, come back and fly back, all on the insurance company's dime, and the insurance company gives them $500. And that is cheaper than actually having them get the pills the normal way. So, and that's real life. So I kind of believe
this. No, no. And actually, I don't believe his theory that it's cheaper to send everyone to Mexico. I just have a hard time with it got put together so fast they were in Mexico that day or the next day.
Fair enough.
That's my issue.
Okay.
Oh, you know what I mean? Like, all these patients signed off on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like they must have had a choice.
To Mexico?
It's like they're going to see anything other than the fucking hospital room. And then they had to transport all the patients there. And this doctor, like, it's just, that all rolled together real fast. That's all. That it just didn't make, that,
okay.
That's what I had a problem.
I gotcha. Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah, the ER doc who's like, "Hey, everybody, my leg is fixed," and no one seems to give a shit.
Right?
Like that's pretty rough.
Yeah, it reminds me of that, you know, the Dennis Nedry meme from Jurassic Park. You know, oh look, illegal stuff. See, nobody cares.
Yeah.
Same thing. Look, oh, her leg is better. See, nobody cares.
Her mom's there in the hallway, and she's ignoring her. And then I like the point. At one point, she starts, "Ma'am, you can't just sit there all day."
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't. It's not like I'm going to give up on it. Like I did Good Doctor, but it's not groundbreaking television by any means anymore. It's,
and Good Doctor got renewed for one more season. This got renewed for three. So, you know, that says a lot right there.
It does, yeah. I want to talk about funny for a moment.
Okay.
Just a moment, apparently. Schooled.
Tell us about Schooled, Mike. Tell us about funny.
Well, that's why I said just for a moment. Well, maybe a moment. This is the episode moving. This is the episode where we're dealing with CB trying to. He's accepted that him and Lainey aren't together because the last episode, Lainey's basically like, "Oh, maybe I don't like Barry." Mm-hmm. And they really don't address that straight away. Instead, it opens with Dr. Glassman.
No, Glasscott.
Glasscott.
Principal Glasscott.
Principal Glasscott, yeah. Being like, we have these bunch of stuff we need to get done. We need people to volunteer for because we don't have it in the budget. And CB volunteers for everything.
Like, literally. It's almost like he's just trying to keep himself busy.
Right.
Which is how Wilma takes it.
Yes. And Wilma is becoming very nice to everybody.
Yeah, when she first got there, she was very aggressive and abrasive.
And all about herself, and now, and yeah. And even when she gets mad at Meller for having CB blow up all his dodgeballs and not doing it himself. Well, I had to hang out with Nurse Shirley. Why? Because any moment I'm not with Nurse Shirley is a bad moment.
Right.
Yeah.
I have to handle Rick's balls.
Yeah.
that was great.
Well, I like how Wilma keeps trying to get him to go out with them and hang out. And he's like, "Oh, I got this to do, that to do." And then I like it when she just goes to his house and calls his bluff.
Yeah.
"Oh, your made-up girlfriend's not here, so you could come out with us?"
Yeah.
And the whole storyline is the movie Swingers was just out, and everybody's into swing dancing and, yeah.
And, you know, dressing like
swingers.
What was, at the time, really
right.
Sexy, I guess.
I guess. Zoot suits and martini shirts unbuttoned with the wife beaters on underneath and,
ooh,
and high-waisted man. Pants and everything, you know.
Yeah.
It was a good episode, though. I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it as well. I still enjoy this show quite a bit.
Meller going out on his own to try to help CB by getting a bunch of girls at the school.
Oh,
by telling them there's going to be a buffet or there's going to be this or that or whatever.
An auction. Raffle.
Yeah. And one, you know, he's like, "Oh, some of these girls are nurses, or they're single, and this one girl is actually named Judy, which is close to Julie."
Right. Like, that's his whole thing.
Yeah.
Because he just, him to have his own Nurse Julie.
Yeah.
Oop, that was a big yawn from Mike.
Sorry. It's only 6 o'clock at night, but I can feel like I want to do that already.
You're feeling it. Yeah. I'm feeling the sleepiness.
But it was a good episode. I enjoyed it.
Now, did you watch Superstore this week? Because I know that you've been sour on it recently.
I'm trying to think what this week's was about.
The employee app.
Yes. Oh, okay. So this actually did make me laugh a little
bit. Okay, yes. This was the first one in a while.
Yeah, this was good because, the store developed a new app, so you don't even have to clock in anymore. You can just tell when you're here. And Jonah's like, wait a second. You guys are okay with, like, you guys don't want to, like, do this, but you're okay with downloading an app that tracks where you are, can tell when you're at work and when you're not at work.
Mm-hmm.
And this, and I love when everyone's okay with it because I don't have to punch in anymore. This is fantastic, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then I love it when they're like in the break room and like, wait a second, the timer on the phone's, you know, and now they can have their phones on them, which they weren't allowed to have their phones on.
They are expected to have their phones on them.
Yes. Oh, wait. And Garrett's making fun of Jonah for being paranoid. And so Jonah tries to set up like, it's not a prank, it's a comeuppance.
Honestly, he did some great stuff.
Where he gets, like, the security guard to be overly... Well,
what he did was he grabbed Garrett's phone, and he goes, so you wouldn't mind if I just did a Google search, like, how do I kill my coworkers? Yes. He's like, no, go ahead. So he does it, and he goes, there you go. And then he gets the security guard to come over. And
the security guard's like, hey, buddy, how's it going? And he's, like, eyeing him the whole time. Yeah. And then I like when he's outside, and he sees the cameras following him as he rolls back and forth.
Because Jonah's up there controlling it with Sandra.
And Sandra went over the top because she wanted to get on this because I'm not good at pranking. She is not.
No. No, she is not.
But they really made Garrett feel paranoid, which was hilarious.
Until the end, it kind of blew up, you know, in his face.
Yeah.
Because he was like, they basically got him to write an email to the local police saying, you know, I put a bomb in the store. And then he's like, they're like, do you want to send that? And Sandra goes, yes.
No, that he said out loud, oh, well, I think I was sending an email to the police. Says, I put a bomb in the store. And the phone's like, oh, composing email to the local police. Do you want to send it? Yes or no? Yes. Sandra, why?
She goes, I always say yes.
And the police show up, this is a serious matter. Like, this is not something to joke about. Someone could have been shot.
Yeah. I loved it. I actually wrote it down because he goes, the cop's like, you should never joke about bombs. And Jonah's like, I thought that was just on airplanes. It's everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. And then, like, they decided to go hang out outside this isn't our break. This is just, like, hanging out in the break room, you know, for a few minutes or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't do a whole 15-minute break in just 15 minutes. Because now every time they go in the break, the timer starts.
Yeah, we don't even, that's not even enough time to start a conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love it when, what's her name? Cheyenne's telling a story. They're like, hurry up! I'm getting there!
So Derek was kissing Meg. Well, who's Derek? Well, if you hadn't rushed me through the story, you would have known. Yeah, so they try the men's room, they try the loading dock, but, you know, they're like, we're not on break, we're just in the break room. Like, this is just hanging out.
Yeah. I thought it was good.
Yep.
Yeah. Finally, it was a good episode.
But we also had Dina got hooked on texting. Wouldn't stop texting Amy.
That's right.
And that became annoying because, you know, then Amy muted her and she didn't get important notifications like the fact that teenagers have discovered chafies.
Yes.
Which are little chafing dish things. And they've discovered they can get high. And then Glenn sold like 1,200 of them to one kid.
Yeah.
Thought that it was very weird. That's why he remembered it.
Yeah.
He didn't do anything about it. I thought it was very weird. That's why I remembered it.
Yeah.
So why were they racing down the road? They were driving to
try to find the kid.
Oh, that's right.
Because the kid rode off on his bike or skateboard or something. Yeah.
And they hit a goose. So they took it to the vet, and it turns out that Rory Scovel, who's a great comedian, is the vet, and he's going to be a love interest for Dina. So that's cool. Dude, I loved one of the things from when they were pranking Garrett. Was Sandra was like, they just said Uncle Phil is on the moon.
Do you know who they're talking about? That's me! They're talking about me!
I look like Uncle Phil. He does. He really does. So, yeah.
Stumptown?
I'm looking and I'm like, there's no other really like comedic stuff. So yeah, I guess we'll go Stumptown.
So Dex is going to L.A. to some woman claims that she wrote a script, which is terrible.
And they did that stupid thing again where they did the cold open.
Yep, they did, except it was 4 days ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw, as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, John's pissed. But I get what you're saying. It's annoying.
Yeah.
I'm just going to long on the short this one. Please. Booger stole someone's script.
I love that he still works so prolifically in Hollywood right now, whether it's side roles like this or he has a recurring role on American Dad. Like, he's still everywhere, but he'll always be Booger.
He's Booger.
He's not Curtis. No, nope. He's Booger.
Booger. So Booger basically stole this woman's script and passed it off on his own. Yeah, he gave it a treatment first, and now this movie's happening, and it's the first script he's been able to sell in years, and all his other scripts are finally starting to get responses. Mm-hmm. And so basically Dex, through getting on to a law and stealing the script and on and on and on, is able to determine that he did do what she did, and so she negotiates so this woman could have full rights, so her name will appear on the script and on the movie as the only person that wrote it, and get the credit for it.
And plus, she's going to get some residuals. And
$50,000, like some tickets to the opening. The head actor that was in it is like trying to come back from being shamed out of the business for his behavior. And he's the one that throws the Molotov cocktail at Gray and Dex. And then when Dex, and then basically he now shows up to threaten Dex, and she set up a sting to get him arrested, but she takes the prop gun from him so he doesn't get caught with the gun at least.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Gray went with him because he was going to go buy this old car that he saw online. It reminds him of his dad's car.
Yep.
Turns out it was his dad's car because his dad lives down there. And his dad's got, like, you know, a wife and a new family. And Gray, through Dex's prodding, goes and visits him. And, of course, it doesn't go well at first. And then when he finally goes back, it's like they reconciled a little bit and talk things out.
Yep.
Yep.
And then back in the real world, Tookie has a party, you know, not a party, but he wants to host events at the bar.
Yes.
And Gray's like, no, it's not happening. It's not happening. So he does it anyway. And Ansel's like, we're not supposed to do this. And they do it.
But it's for
Hartman? Oh, it's for the lieutenants.
Hartman?
Yeah.
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 No, it's not for the lieutenants. That's for the sergeant or whatever. It's for his family.
Yep. And he has a very tenuous grasp on his family right now. So he kind of, he wants to do this to bring everybody back together. And meanwhile, the antique Civil War pistol that belonged to Gray's grandfather was recently appraised for $20,000+ is gone. Yeah. The plaque is still there, but the pistol's gone. So to Tookie's credit, he fesses right up. Like, he gets Gray on the phone. He's like, dude, the pistol's gone. He goes, what do you mean? He goes, the pistol's gone, the one that was on the wall. And Gray's like, yeah, I put it in the safe in my apartment. I knew you'd have a party after I told you not to.
Yeah.
And I didn't want it to get stolen.
We'll talk about this when I get home. It was funny.
It was great.
And then the other little side story is Dex goes to see Maribel, aunt or family member, and trying to find out where her parents are because she wants to kind of reconcile or see her parents because she hasn't.
Doesn't know why they abandoned her and Ansel.
And Maribel basically says that her parents abandoned her and Ansel to protect them. So, dun-dun-dun! But we don't get another episode till March 4th-ish, says here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I knew there was a delay. I just had to find it. So.
Yeah.
I'm still watching The Conners. I don't talk about it, but I just enjoyed the hell out of it.
Good.
It's Roseanne.
Did you watch the live episode that they did?
I watched it eventually, yeah.
Did they stumble over any lines or anything? Could the laughter, like, drown them out so they were like, oh, we got to wait for the laughter?
Kind of, yeah. You could tell it was live.
Yeah. But
it was political. It had to do with the debate.
Okay.
Oh, boy. What else did I watch? What else did you watch?
This Is Us?
Oh, yeah. This was a letdown, wasn't it?
Kind of, yeah.
Wasn't this whole thing like the mom and the kids get to the cabin to find that douchebag boyfriend got mad He was basically just, he continued to be a petty jerk, and so he locked Kate out of the cabin.
Mm-hmm. And she was out there for maybe 5 minutes.
And she cut her hand on glass trying to get back in.
Mm-hmm.
And
because she broke a window.
Yeah, she broke a window, and then when she was unlocking the window, she cut her hand on the sharp glass, because when you have jagged glass in a hole, you don't clear it out first.
Mm-hmm.
And basically they're like, boy, you know, mom kicks Mark out and is like, you'll never see Kate again. And that's that. I mean, that was pretty much the end of it. Like, I don't.
Well, for that part of it, yeah,
I know.
Yeah, I expected there to be more. I expected there to be like full on abuse or.
We got three episodes. All I know, we got to get to the cabin for Kate, and it was. I mean, not saying that he wasn't an asshole. He was, but it just wasn't as bad as they built it up to be. It wasn't. It didn't appear to be as traumatic as they built it up to be.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
And then in future time. Or current time, when the siblings are at the cabin, you know, it's not really about, and where were they for, one night? Like, two of them flew across the country to spend one night at this cabin?
Yeah.
That's not logical.
No.
In any sense of the world.
No, and it's not cost efficient. Like, no. I know Kevin has his acting career, and Randall
right. And yeah.
apparently has money. I don't know where Kate's making her money from.
Kevin probably just fits the bill out.
Probably.
But they go to the cabin and they lose power and they end up digging up a time capsule, which that episode was. And in the time capsule, they find a drawing that. Well, they find a tape that their dad had made and buried, a cassette tape. So they get to listen to their dad's voice again. That was cool.
That was really cool
as hell.
Yeah.
And then there's a drawing in there, like something he had sketched out about building them a new cabin, kind of, you know, bigger.
It was going to be a house for him.
Retirement.
Yeah.
And Kevin, of course, takes a look at it, and he looks, looking up at the hill where it was, and then we see that that's Kevin's house. Because we get to the, finally, you know, to the future again, mm-hmm. and we see Kevin coming back with the food finally.
Was it Kevin's house, or was it... a house that he had built for Rebecca and Miguel.
True, that could have been that. You're right.
Because when Beth met him at the door, she said, everyone's in there with Rebecca.
Yeah, that's true. Well, because we'd already seen the brother was in there with Rebecca, remember?
Right.
The uncle or Jack's brother or whatever. But we still haven't seen Kate in the future. And we don't know who Kevin's wife is.
Right. Mother of his child.
Right. But... he's got full old man beard going on, and there's a framed picture of the drawing at the door. So that was kind of cool.
Okay. Once again, I say this with all sincerity in my heart.
Yeah.
I am a straight man. Yeah. I really like women. However, old man Kevin looked fucking great.
Yep. Yeah, they definitely...
I'm sorry. That guy with the gray hair and the beard and everything. Whew. Damn. I got a little excited there for a second.
Oh, that's too much. That is just too much sharing right there.
Anywho. So, yeah, we're dealing with them, all dealing with their stuff. You know, what's his name there? I want to say right. Kevin pitched a little fit because, you know, Kate and Randall both knew about mom's thing. And he didn't know because, well, like he said, you know, so what? I'm too sensitive. I can't handle it. I can't. Well, yeah, kind of.
But he pulled it together. And
yeah, he was like, did.
Okay. Because remember... because
he's not Randall.
And we got that episode a few episodes back where they're at the cabin. Mom, remember it was a Thanksgiving one where they did the misdirection where we thought mom got lost that day, but it was a different day.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, we're not talking to Kevin right now, we're fighting. Or now we're not talking to Randall, we're fighting or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
And his wife's throwing up or something.
Yeah.
Just had a baby or something. And Kate signed her name, Pearson.
Yeah, so...
Toby's with his son.
This was one of the coolest parts of the entire thing.
Yeah.
Go for it.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so he's trying to be a dad.
Yeah.
And he feeds him scrambled eggs.
Which,
way too big of a piece.
And he's way too young for scrambled eggs at that age.
Yeah, so he's just like, here you go, put it in front of him. And, of course, the kid chokes. And then he's slapping him on the back.
Yeah, that was a real technique. I had to use that once.
And, of course, you could see that they had subbed in a doll, but
oh, yeah,
we're not going to have a baby on there that big right. old Toby's clapping on the back, you know, for 15 takes. So, but he gets it dislodged, and takes him to the doctor, and the doctor's like, you did everything great. You're fine. Everything's fine. And he brings him home, and he's like really scared and really, and he sits down with him and actually explains to Jack Star Wars.
Yes.
And does the sound effects, like does Chewbacca and R2-D2 and the lightsaber, because he's not going to be able to see it, but he can explain it to him.
Right.
And, you know, little Jack sitting there eating the toys and like clapping them and smiling and giggling. And I was like, that's really awesome.
That was awesome.
You know, because that was one of his things. And now he's getting to that point where he can say, yeah, okay, I may not be able to blah, blah. You know, I may not be able to sit down and watch it with him, but we can still experience Star Wars together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I liked it. I thought it was well done.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's Star Wars related. I like it. You?
Yep. Yep. That was on.
Really? I thought you would like this episode. This episode was the shits.
Wait. You mean the shits isn't good or bad?
Terrible.
Okay. So why did you think I would like it?
I don't know. I was being sarcastic.
Okay. I was like, wait a minute. What?
You like shitty
things.
Yeah.
That, okay.
That was me. That was Michael's voice coming out of me.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah, I did not like the premise of this episode.
I hated this episode. I really did hate it.
It was like they tried to do the whole 24 thing, you know, with him. Essentially, he has time-release handcuffs. That he lashes Delilah to the table in the room and tells her, you know, in 16 hours, I will be out of the country. I will be gone. You will feel free to go to Ellie. Like, he even sends Ellie a nice text message from Delilah that says, you know, chasing a story, be back tomorrow. You're on your own. And he's got his plane ticket.
Yeah.
He's ready to go. And then
40 fucks it up.
40 fucks it up with a fake kidnapping.
Yep.
Because we need to be locked in this room to hammer out this script and
Ellie's coming over. I hired guys to shoot us if we try to leave.
Yeah. So then we play the 24 game where he keeps looking at the clock and trying to figure it out. And they're talking about Beck and, you know, the story. And, oh, looks like he could get away. Oh, looks like he could get away. Nope. 40 dosed him with LSD.
Yeah. And now we deal with this for a spell where he's having these – and he ends up talking to Love, who's drunk and freaking out with her mom over – over. And it's funny because, like, her mom's like, oh, Will, I'm so sorry. She just had too much to drink. And she's being nice about it. And Will, seeing her with, like, black eyes, like, no wonder you think your mother's a demon. Your mother treats you poorly. She's a demon.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did like that part.
But, yeah.
It was shitty.
You know, 40 was a dick. Goes to the bar. Says, I'll pay you $10,000. Pulls out a wad of cash.
Yeah.
I'll give you $10,000 to kiss your new bride. And then he does. As Joe says in his narration, you know, he just destroyed that marriage.
Yeah. And basically he's like, you know what, 40's unsavable, fuck him, I'm sorry. And he leaves.
Yep.
Runs into Love again. I guess they're going to try to work things out. And so he's going to go back. Now, is he going back to kill Delilah or to set her? Because he's trying to get back there before her handcuffs let her free. Is he going to kill her, do you think?
No, I think he's going to set her free. I think he's basically going to tell her, look, I'm going to stay here, but we need to, kind of like what he did with Will.
Yeah.
You know?
But he gets back there, and she is dead. Mm-hmm. Well, I would say the size of the puddle of blood all around and the blood splatter on the glass makes you think she's dead.
Right. And that's how the episode ends. We don't know who killed her because he also has lost time.
Yes.
It could be an hour. It could be 3 hours. 40 was in the zone, so he doesn't know how long he was gone.
Right.
But he had gone to get groceries, snacks, stuff like
something.
That.
Yeah.
And when he came back, he thought he had blood on his hands. And, yeah, so we don't know who killed Delilah.
So there's two episodes left.
Mm-hmm.
No, wrong mythical story, honey. So there's two episodes left. Do we want to continue the week by week with these two, or do we just want to watch them both?
Just burn through them both.
I think so.
I think we've reached that point where it's like, let's just rip off the band.
Let's finish this story.
Yeah, because I kind of got this ruined for me anyway, because, well, I'll tell you after that.
What did you get ruined? The next episode?
No, the end of this episode. Because I had seen headlines start popping up that are like, who killed Delilah? And I'm like, well, fuck, I haven't watched that part yet.
Oh. Well, at least you didn't see a headline that said, "This is who killed Delilah."
Right. Right.
I think that would probably be worse.
So let me look.
Is that all the shows?
No. Nope, there's at least two other shows.
Oh, God. Help me out.
Well, first off, are you still keeping up on Sex Education?
No.
Okay.
No.
It's still good. I'm still enjoying it. That's all I'm going to say about that. Kind of like you with the Conners. Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist?
Yes. We did watch that second episode.
Now, here's the thing. A lot of times with shows, the pilot can be strong.
Yes.
And it really comes on strong, and you're like, yes, this is going to be great. And then you realize that they wasted all their magic on the pilot.
Yeah.
And the second episode, you go, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Like, why did they change it so much? I don't feel that was the case at all.
I feel like there really wasn't a whole lot of story development in this episode.
Nope.
Like,
nope, there was not.
There's a couple good song and dance numbers. Problem,
which was her trying to lead this group and not knowing how to lead people.
Right.
Because she's always been an individual. And so she does what you and I have done in the past and said, fuck it, I'll do it myself.
Do it myself. Yeah. I do like that the neighbor walks in and she's like, oh, is that we're in a relationship? We just walk into each other's houses without knocking down? That's just great. And the neighbor just completely ignores, like, your place is terrible.
Yep.
It's depressing and sad. Well, I'm not here when I'm at work. It's still sad.
Yep.
But her neighbor is trying to figure out what makes this musical stuff happen.
And it's cool because we get to see things like in the coffee shop.
Yes.
You know, when everybody busts in a song and she's like, oh, it's happening again. But it's not Mo's not singing.
Yes.
Which is interesting.
Well, that was the thing. We established some guidelines, which was sometimes no time passes at all when she sees these acts.
Right.
Sometimes a lot of time passes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, she can talk to someone at the same time as them happening without that person being involved.
Right. Like when she first addresses the group, you know, at the work meeting and he's singing Sucker to her and she's talking to him. She's like, really, we have a meeting to do. I have to talk about this, but he's not hearing any of that because that's all happening in there. But then at the coffee shop, when everyone's singing, I want to dance with somebody, really cool rendition.
Oh, that was a great cover version, whatever. Very slow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you felt really sad for everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's supposed like, I've always heard it as an upbeat song.
Yes.
But yeah, so while they're doing that, she's actually having the conversation with Mo because she tried the noise-canceling headphones.
Well, those aren't working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
the music's not, I'm not hearing it. It's in my head.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Which is good.
So they did what they hadn't done in the pilot. They established a lot of things.
Yes.
Her dad seems to have been proving thoroughly.
Yes.
You know,
he can actually press a button now.
Yes, which is hilarious.
I love that when he's like, hey, you remember that game Taboo that we used to play? We all hated that annoying buzzer. Look.
Yeah. hey, Dad, and which one do you love the most? Me? Sorry. Like, I thought that was funny.
Yep.
We get to see Peter Gallagher sing again.
Yep. Which was cool. What was the song? It was Moon Dancer.
Moon Dancer.
Moon Dance, yeah. Yep.
I really enjoyed the episode. I thought it was really good.
And she's trying to hook Max up with the barista.
And she regrets it.
She does regret it, but I thought that her reasoning behind it was logical in the beginning because she's like, look, I've got to be his boss for one. And two, I'm dealing with all this stuff. And until I can get that's psychotic. Like, I can't deal with all of this in my life right now. So let's just she's a lonely person. He's a lonely person. Let's put them together and see if this works.
And then he brings her dad the pudding from the farm to table place. And she's like, oh, no, he's a super nice guy.
Which he is.
Yeah.
But she says at the end that she's ready to accept her condition. So,
which will be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, I hope that they don't backpedal like they do in other episodes, like with New Amsterdam, like I was telling you with the Indian doctor, where every episode it seems like they go back and have to deal with this all over again.
Yeah.
You know, I want this to be, I'm ready to deal with it, and this is just going to be who I am now. And then there was one other show.
Hunters.
Yeah.
Premiere episode. I didn't know they're going to drop all 10 episodes at once, but they did. I just watched the premiere episode. It was an hour and a half.
Definitely, like, I did not want to watch another episode after that first
episode. No, it was a long episode.
It was a long episode, and it was heavy.
Oh, my God. So the episode opens at this 1970s. They're in Florida, I think. It's a pool party. Little kids are in the pool. They're having a cookout. And this coworker shows up with his wife, and she sees the cook, and he's got like a weird southern accent, but not really, you know, golly gee willikers.
He's one of those guys. Yes. You've seen him in a million things, but he's never been a leading man.
And she starts freaking out and basically accuses him of being a Nazi, who the butcher who killed all these people, and on and on and on and on and on. And eventually, like, finally, he's like, oh, fuck this. And he takes a gun out with a silencer on, that's been underneath this thing outside. And he shoots his wife first, and then her boyfriend, and then his three kids in the pool. And then turns and shoots the old, like, his in-laws that were there with them. And then confesses to her, rips Jewish people apart.
Oh my God. Not just Jewish people, but he's like, I had to come over here 30 years ago. I had to put up with her.
Yeah.
I had to spawn these three horrible little offspring that every day I felt like strangling them.
Yes.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah, all these people were beneath and around him. And she's like, we survived. He's like, you didn't survive. You've been dead. You just haven't died yet.
Yeah, he said something like, you marinated her.
Yeah, you were marinated. That was vicious.
Yeah.
And then he kills her. That's the cold opening.
Yeah.
Holy shit, that was heavy and deep and like.
It was. Yeah. I was like, what the fuck? And I will say this too, and I'm sure you'll agree. Like, this is supposed to be a show about hunting Nazis.
Yeah.
And they really, like, that guy right there was the standard for how the Nazis are viewing people in this show.
Yes.
Like, he was not an outlier. He was not an over-the-top. Like,
no.
He was actually a little tame compared to some of the ones that we meet later.
No, essentially, the Nazis in this world, and I don't know if this is how it really was or not. I don't know. But the Nazis in this world that we're dealing with are basically, they're still, they're not demilitarized. They're militarized in an underground type environment where they are still mobilized and still trying to put, almost like Hydra and SHIELD.
Mm-hmm.
They're there. They're in the background. You know, they have their chain of command. They're trying to get their stuff done. Mm-hmm. You know, quietly in the background type of thing.
Right.
And in this story, we eventually meet Jonah, who is selling drugs to help make ends meet with him and his grandmother. And they live in Brooklyn. And then he hears a noise. He goes downstairs and he sees a guy kill his grandmother, but he had kind of like a mask on. So we go through this whole little backstory of him and his shitty life he's got going on. But he's super smart. Mm-hmm. And we see like his grandmother being murdered and the funeral and everything he's dealing with. We meet Al Pacino's character. And then while he's trying to figure out who murdered his grandmother, he gets arrested by the police.
Yep.
And he gets brought down to the station. The cops are sympathetic. In reality, like, look, we understand, but you can't be doing this stuff. He's like, I wasn't trying to sell the drugs. I was trying to buy information to see who killed her. And while he's sitting there getting, like, a little lecture from this detective, he's looking at, like, this map showing these murders.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually when the detective gets done, he's just like, oh, we leave you to the detective work? Really? Well, if you guys were any true detectives, you would have seen. And he rattles off this giant clue of these murders going on, and it follows this train. And clearly he was this guy's riding this train and finding his victims that way and da-da-da-da-da-da on this route. And he shits all over the detective and everybody, and he just gets up and walks off. The detective's just staring at the map going like, holy shit, he's right. So we established in that moment, and then later on we established another moment where he is very intelligent. He sees things differently than people. He's good at puzzles and figuring things out. That's how he finds Al Pacino's, like, hidden room.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, essentially he finds the guy that killed his grandmother and tries to kill him but then can't, and the guy hits him with not a taser, but a stun gun and puts him out and then tortures him by throwing darts at him.
Yeah.
Trying to get information out of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and he has really good aim.
Yeah.
And he actually says to him at one point, he's like, now you're going to tell me what I want to know, or am I going to start aiming for your eyes?
Yeah. And he's hitting him in the chest, stomach, legs, arms that are exposed. I mean, he's throwing darts at him. And he has to go out. Someone's pounding on the door so that he goes, because it's at a toy store for kids. This guy,
tiny red balloon toy store, which All I could think of was that song, 99 Red Balloons.
Yeah.
You know, that's also done in German.
So he goes out and says, hey, blah, blah, blah. The kid manages to get free of his binds, and then he stabs the Nazi in the eye with a dart, and then the door's locked. He can't get out, and then they're rustling again. And before the Nazi can kill him, Al Pacino kills the Nazi by stabbing him in the throat from behind.
Mm-hmm.
And the Nazi already had, oh my God, this was so terrible. He had that X on his throat from the scar because there was this Jewish kid who was a genius and
chess player.
Genius chess player. And there's this Nazi guy that fancied himself as a genius chess player. And now they were playing chess, but they were using a human size board. And they had naked Jewish women on one side and Jewish men on the other. And then the Jewish women were like the white pawn piece, the white pieces, and the men were the black. And they had to call out chess moves. But when, like, say, the bishop took the rook, he doesn't just take the rook and she goes to the side. No, he has to kill her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just killing people.
And when they show the aerial of it, you see how they made, like, a chessboard on the ground. And you see the people, the players, where they are, and then you just see graves with bodies in them waiting to be buried because they keep playing chess game after chess game. And when the chess master finally gets tired of it, he tries to kill the German. He gets killed himself, but he does slash an X into his throat first. I mean, that was disturbing.
Yeah.
It makes you go, did that really happen? And then who the fuck thought this up?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found myself thinking the same way, like, this is grotesque, and either somebody has a vivid imagination or shit like this really happened.
Yeah.
And either way, that's pretty gross.
Yeah. You talk about it for a while.
The episode itself was very dark and very gritty.
Yeah.
And it was meant to be. You know, the whole place, this was the summer of the Son of Sam killers. You know, you hear that on the radio. They're in the ghettos. And this is very Jewish community oriented. And, you know, while he's at his grandmother's funeral, that one woman comes in and basically tells him, you know, what did she say? Like, only direct family can sit Shiva or something like
that. Yeah.
And he tells her right back to her face. He's like, you know what? Her brother and sister were killed in the ghettos. My mother died giving birth to me. Her grandkids are, and he goes through all these people that are dead. He goes, so I'm the only one left. So if it's all right with you, I'll sit here and you can shut your fucking gefilte fish stinking face.
Yeah.
And then Al Pacino comes out, delivers one of the coolest lines. He goes, in a world full of diarrhea and constipation, sometimes it's okay to be a regular piece of shit. I love that.
That was a great line.
That was great.
You're right. This is heavy and it is dark and it is supposed to be. And I don't have any. And I get it. I mean, I enjoyed the episode.
Like, the kid's trying to sell weed.
Yes.
That's his thing. And yeah. And his grandmother finds that before she's killed. And she's pissed. But he's like, how do you think I keep a roof over our heads? You know, he's been accepted at all these colleges, but he can't go because he doesn't have the money.
Right.
So he's trying to sell weed and some bully, you know, beats the crap out of him,
and,
you know, throwing all the Jewish slurs at him. And so, you know, he'll be getting his comeuppance later.
Oh, I hope so.
But yeah, it's kind of hard to swallow some of this stuff.
Yeah. This is definitely not something I would sit there and binge.
No,
I think this is a slow watcher.
It's a slow watcher and it's one that is going to sink in. Like I noticed I hit next episode so that I could see, and the next episode's like 59 minutes.
Yes. I did look at that myself. Yeah.
But the cool part was at the end, you know, Al Pacino basically tells him that, you know, this is the hunt.
Yeah.
And that they're not killing it's not murder. They are killing these people because it has to be done, because it's the right thing to do, because, you know, Jewish people have been persecuted all these years. There's no place for intolerance and bigotry here. And he tells him that his grandmother, none of the kills took place without her okay. She was the one who planned them out. So basically she was the mastermind behind it.
Yeah.
And she would track them down and she would say, yes, this is definitely this person. And she would give the go ahead. So then we get one of those cool things where he introduces the rest of the team. Kind of, he just opens a door and you see all these people. And we get flashbacks to how each one of them has been watching the kid since his grandmother's death. So that guy in the cold opening comes back into play.
Yeah.
Because he calls essentially a Nazi cleaner. you know, this young guy who has a swastika tattooed right on his shoulder blade. And
he says something to a girl later on at the laundromat.
Yeah.
He says, like, you have to separate the whites from the coloreds because the coloreds will bleed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bleed all over everything.
Yeah. He's basically a wet works guy. Yeah. And the guy calls him in there and he goes, hey, so you got to clean up all these people. You know, I was having a lunch thing, blah, blah, blah. And this is taking me forever. He goes, just shoot me in the left arm so that I can still jerk off with my right one.
Oh, we'll just blame it on a black guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he says, the jewelry's all in the house. Just take care of it. Oh, and that folder right there, that goes to the senator. He has to do what's in it. Make sure he does what's in it. So the guy shows
up. That's your job. No, I can't do it.
Yep. Yeah. So the guy shows up at the bowling alley.
And he does shoot him in the arm.
Yeah, yeah. So he shows up to the bowling alley, and he insists on size 9 shoes, which, again, he's German, and he keeps saying nines, nines, nines. And the guy's like, dude, we're closing up right now. So he gets the 9 shoes and then goes over to the senator and starts quoting, "Are You My Mother?" by Dr. Seuss.
Yeah.
And essentially says, yeah, that's Jack Jr.'s favorite book, and, you know, he really likes to have it read to him. I know, because I was there. And he asked me if I'm the monster under his bed. And he says that every time you come in to look for the monster, it's not there. But you know what? The monster is there. And if you don't change your vote, I'm going to kill him and I'm going to kill your wife.
Oh, and then he beats up the senator's other two friends or bodyguards or whatever with the bowling ball.
Three of them.
Yeah, the three of them with the bowling ball.
And one of them, he like mashes it.
Gosh.
I know. He mashes it right into the guy's face and then keeps pressing. And you can actually see the teeth falling out of his head.
Yeah, that was bad.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
like they don't shy away from the gratuitous violence.
No,
there was also so the senator did change his vote. So now,
oh, and then he threw a perfect strike with the bowling ball that was covered in people's blood that he beat people up with.
Yeah, so he got himself a visit from the colonel.
Yeah,
and the colonel is a female.
Yeah,
and she's Frau Colonel. She says, "I see big things for you."
Yeah,
but. Then there was also the episode started off by saying that there was gratuitous violence.
Yep.
And it said nudity. I didn't realize that it was going to be a 70-year-old woman.
Yeah. That was the other backstory was there was a NASA scientist that was killed. Essentially, she went to go take a shower and the shower locked behind her. And then instead of water, after a while of water coming out, then gas came out, just like in the gas chambers in Auschwitz or whatever. And she died.
Yeah.
And this is how they introduced to us a FBI detective woman who was sent down there to investigate this because she's basically she wants to do her job and be taken seriously. So she's viewed as a pain in the ass by her male counterparts in New York. So they sent her down to Florida where she looks into this. And long and the short of it, she discovers that this was a Nazi scientist who was brought over here. Because she finds a picture of this scientist who's dead, a picture of her young with Hitler. And when she's talking to NASA, NASA tries to play it off that she was working on something about helping people in zero G's and this and that. And she's like, oh, you mean what the person, and like she knew that in 1964, this person had already discovered that. So don't fucking lie to me. And he's like, you know what? If you want to know what her top secret stuff is, later. And he leaves. And then the other guy basically says, it was a pretty cool Russian proverb. Did you write it down?
I did not.
Okay. But basically it's like, you know, when the cosmonauts, when they went to space, they are sent with a shotgun. And the reason why is...
sawed-off
shotgun. And the reason why, so when they landed, if they went off course and they had to hike back through, they could use the
Siberia.
Gun. Yeah, they could use the gun to kill the bears and the wolves coming at them. So when you find... Because you're not the first person to come asking about her. And so when you do find... When you need to find who that person is. And when you do, make sure you have a sawed-off shotgun because you're going to be dealing with bears and wolves. Mm-hmm. And he walks away. So, ominous.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to watching the second episode at some point this week. And yeah, it's dark and it's violent and it is cold in here.
It is cold in here. It was warmer when I got here, but I think you guys just like had dinner or something.
No, I didn't haven't eaten anything today.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think that's it for shows for me. Yeah.
It is for me.
So that just leaves the back end of our things, which is movies, trailers, and news. What order do you want to tackle that in?
Well, I got a couple of movies I watched.
Okay. I saw garbage for trailers this week, so.
I think I sent you something. I can't remember now. I thought I did. Maybe I'm wrong.
Why don't you check and let me know?
Looking.
Ooh, a 2.2 magnitude earthquake struck Sebattis.
Oh, well, look at that. Oh, shit, you sent me that Bad Education trailer, and I forgot to watch it.
Okay. Well, I'll sum it up real quick. It's an HBO movie that is based on real events where he was a very good educator and turned into an embezzler.
Okay.
Yep.
Does it look good?
It looks like it's going to be an HBO movie. Well, not movie. I think it's going to be a limited series.
Okay.
It'll be interesting. You know, they're like fourth highest in their area for test scores, and they want him to get up to first highest. And so it looks like there'll be scandal, and it's got Hugh Jackman. So that's always good.
Any other trailers?
Garbage. Like I said, I saw one called Feel Good, and I didn't even care about it. I saw one called Big Time Adolescence that's Pete Davidson trying to be a father figure, but he's really just a giant man-child anyway. And
okay.
It's supposed to be a Sundance gem. That's why I watched it. I didn't really care.
News?
Well, I do have a few news items.
Okay.
So the director of Happy Death Day says that his next film will be super gory, drenched in blood, and a hard R.
Nice.
He really enjoyed doing the two Happy Death Days. I really enjoyed
them. I liked both of them. They were great.
Yeah, but he said that his next one is going to be a horror movie, and it is going to be a hard R. So that's good. Unfortunately, I'm sorry to say this, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
The Blacklist was renewed for season 8. And this might not mean as much to you.
God, is that still coming back? I forgot all about that show. Is it done for this year?
I think it is coming back to us shortly.
Anyways.
This won't mean as much to you because I don't think that it really matters to you, but it does to me. Eli Roth is going to be directing a Borderlands movie. Borderlands is a game series that is based on just craziness. Like, everything's over the top. You shoot everyone. Yep. Like, their taglines are always millions and billions of guns. Everyone's got a gun. There's a billion different guns. There's guns that you throw them on the ground and they run around with legs and shoot other people. Ooh. And Eli Roth is going to be directing it. I really don't feel good about that.
March 22nd, The Blacklist comes back.
Great. The Rock may be coming to part 2 of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Hmm.
And they are officially calling it part 2. Not Sonic 2, but part 2. So,
okay.
But yeah, there was some Twitter stuff going on, and they mentioned that The Rock might be in part 2. So,
cool.
I'll get behind it. Rainn Wilson is coming to a show called The Power that's going to be on Netflix. It's based on a graphic novel. Sounds very aggressive. Mm-hmm. Basically,
there's a lot of properties based on graphic novels I've never heard of that are coming or out or being produced.
The story behind this one is like some women start waking up to have power to like move objects, and then they can electrocute. And pretty soon, like every woman on the planet has all these powers to kill people.
Sweet.
Yeah. So the power dynamic shifts. Rainn Wilson's going to be in it. He's going to be the mayor of Washington State.
So, okay.
Yeah. Netflix is actually, this is interesting. Netflix is in talks to extend Lucifer for another season. Now, Fox ended it after 3. Netflix got it for season 4 and then said season 5, we've written what we want to write and that's going to be it. We're going to give them a send off. They were all excited. Everyone was like, oh, but we'll miss it. But, you know, at least they said season 5 will be the end. We're all done. Now that they've wrapped filming and they're getting ready to release it, they're like, you know, maybe we'll do a 6th season.
Hmm.
And then this one, I thought of you. The Jim Henson Company.
Ooh, nice.
Is making an Office meets Harry Potter fantasy comedy with Christoph Waltz.
Oh, nice.
It says a rudderless young man begins to suspect something's a little off about the London firm where he's just landed an entry-level gig, and he's not wrong. For instance, one of the middle managers is secretly a shape-shifting goblin. That's the setup for The Portable Door, a book series set to become a movie with some very cool talent behind it.
Mm.
It's based on Tom Holt's series of satirical fantasy novels that begins with a book, the title book. A later entry is entitled You Don't Have to Be Able to Work Here, But It Helps.
I've heard of that.
It's getting the big screen treatment, taking us into the world of mysterious J.W. Wells and Company.
Mm. Nice.
Yeah.
I like Jim Henson Company, and I like Christoph Waltz, so that works.
All right, that's it for me for news and trailers.
I don't have anything for news.
I just watched one movie this week. You watched a few?
I had three movie-type things I watched.
Okay, what do you got?
I watched a documentary on Netflix called American Factory.
Okay.
It was excellent, actually. It was about this GM factory in Ohio. I think Dayton, Ohio, maybe.
Okay.
It shut down in 2008. And then in 2015, a Chinese billionaire bought it to make auto glass. Windshield, side windows, back window, rear windows, etc. And it's all about... It's really interesting because this factory opens up again and hires workers.
Okay.
As
factories do.
Right, but like when the factory shut down, all these people lost their jobs, they lost their homes, they lost all this other stuff. And now, like, years later, this factory is being opened up again to do something different. And a lot of the same people going back to work there again.
Oh.
When they worked at GM, they were making $26 an hour. When they started here, they're making $12 an hour.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's a little bit less, right?
Yikes.
But they can't find a job, obviously, which is why they're going to work there. However, it's a Chinese head company's headed by a Chinese man, and he has companies all around the world that do the same thing, and specifically one in China that also makes this auto glass.
Okay.
And this company has they produce 70% of the glass for the auto companies around the world. So they have a pretty good share of the market.
Okay.
And essentially, we see this company here in America trying to start up. The people working, you're dealing with cross-cultural issues between how Chinese culture and American culture. You're dealing with, they brought over Chinese workers from China to work at this factory to help train the American workers on how to do what they want to get done.
But these are the American workers who worked there before.
Right, but this, it was an auto factory that built cars.
Oh.
Now they're just making glass, so it's
gotcha.
Making windows with sand, so it's a lot different. We actually see a group of these American workers go to China for this conference. I like all that, the heads of the departments go to China, and we get to see how China works. And it's really amazing. In China, there's no union. There's no union at this factory. They don't want a union there. Part of this documentary is about the workers trying to start a union.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work. You see how in China, everyone works 12 hours a day, 6 days a week.
Okay.
These American workers work 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. And
even that's too much.
The American factory is not producing what the Chinese factory is producing. I mean, like, it's – you should really go watch it, actually, because it's fascinating to see the difference between the two, the difference between the cultures, the cross-culture, the culture clashes. I mean, everything that is involved with it. It was actually really fascinating. It was a lot more interesting than I thought. Kate kind of got sucked into it as well. We both didn't think – you know, it was a lot different than we thought it was going to be, and it was really good.
Yeah. Okay.
I watched A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. The wife and I did, right before you got here, actually. Holy cow.
So this was not a documentary.
Holy cow. But no, this is the Tom Hanks.
But it does cover a real event that happened.
I loved how it was basically a long episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood where it was bookended with the beginning of the show and the end of the show and then throughout the show, and it was kind of intercut with the story you're seeing. Wow. It was powerful,
wasn't it?
And Tom Hanks as Mr. Rogers, like...
So, my impression...
It's a very emotional movie.
When I first walked in and I sat down, and like you said, they open with an episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Yeah.
And he's got the little board up there of, here are some of my friends. And he opens up the doors, and, oh, this is so... Like, I'm watching it, and I'm like, that's Tom Hanks. Yeah, it's Tom Hanks playing Mr. Rogers. By the end of the movie, I was like, it's Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, it's really weird. I felt the same way.
And then they have in the credits, I don't know if you watched it, but they do have a clip from an episode with Fred Rogers.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, yeah, that's I could still give it to Tom.
It was amazing how he acted, how everyone acted around him, his staff, everybody, his handlers, his wife, you know, and Mr. Rogers.
I love his wife. Well, I don't call him Rog at home, dear.
I don't call him Mr. Rogers
right,
at home. Yeah,
exactly.
You call him Rog.
Yeah.
You know, how just... I don't know, it was kind of an amazing story. You know, them seeing Mr. Rogers' theme on the train, everybody, how cynical this reporter was, and we find out the reason why, and his relationship with his dad and his mom, and holding on to all this anger, and Mr. Rogers helping him, and just, God, it was crazy. And I like how the guy was so skeptical, like, there's no way he's this genuinely nice and good of a person. It's just, people aren't like that. Mm-hmm. And then by the end, he's like, yeah, he was. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually read the Esquire article mm-hmm. after, and
was it good?
Yeah, it's a good article. Yeah. Like, it makes you see a lot of what you see in the movies, like, oh, okay, this happened. This is real type of thing. Like, it's kind of crazy good.
One of the best lines in that really summed up a lot of it for me, and really, like, I don't know that there's anything that happens in the world right now that can match up with that, was when they were talking on the phone, and Mr. Rogers said to him, you know, I'm talking to you right now. This is the most important thing in the entire world to me.
Yeah.
Is listening to you.
Yeah.
And he meant that, because right then, yeah. you know, and, you know, we all, like, we get phone calls and we're like, fuck, somebody's calling me. God damn, yeah. I don't want to talk to somebody on the phone. Yeah. You know, to just imagine somebody having that attitude.
Like, yeah, you know what the most important thing in the world is right now? Talking to you on the phone.
Yeah.
Just, it was really cool. And there was a moment in the movie where they're at the Chinese restaurant and Mr. Rogers, Tom Hanks, whatever, it doesn't matter, says, I want you to do something for me. I just want to take a minute.
Oh my God.
I want you to think of the people that love, because he talks about his dad, and even though his dad was a piece of shit, he says, yeah, but your dad had a hand in making you who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you gotta think about that. Like, you are the way you are because of the people that have touched you and affected your life, and basically good, bad, or indifferent, you know, you are the way you are because of that. You know, and I like you for being you. And he's like, let's take a moment, like a minute, just 1 minute of silence, just to think about that. Everyone in the restaurant stops, and they all, there's no noise. There's no background noise. There's no ambient noise. It's silent. Kate and I were sitting there silently watching. And then they do the thing where Mr. Rogers or Tom Hanks is looking directly at the camera. So he's like, he's looking at you through this. And it's just like,
the same thing happened in the theater. Cause like I said, I went with my mom and my sister on Thanksgiving to watch the theater. Same thing. Like, we're all just sitting there, and, like, you couldn't even hear people breathing
in
the theater.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of people in there, and it was just dead silent. And then afterwards, you'd hear people go, oh, my God.
Yeah, and then he just goes, thank you.
Yeah.
And I like to know, oh, you can breathe again. You can talk again.
Yeah.
The noise in the restaurant starts, and it's just like, wow.
Yeah.
But there was a couple of moments where I got pretty emotional in the movie. It was awesome.
It really makes you, like, when I got over here, you were very mellow.
Yeah.
Because you had just watched
it. I literally just finished watching the movie.
You know what? The world's not that bad. And I actually said, it seems like the edibles kicked in. You were like, nope, just got done watching that movie.
Got done watching Mr. Rogers. And it's just like, I kind of feel bad for kids now that don't have Mr. Rogers to watch, because it's really not on.
No.
You know?
You got Daniel Stern-Pataglia. That's not
the same. It's not the same. Not even close.
And
I mean, yeah, you're horrific, but it's not even close.
I feel bad for them, and I feel bad for the rest of us that,
yeah.
I mean, he was such a good person. We don't really have anybody like that. I mean, right now we've got the direct opposite in our White House.
Yeah, I don't even go there.
But we don't have anybody who is good like that. You know, just genuinely good. So, but yeah, what a great movie. Oh,
I you know, and I know I'm going to say this because that's who they got. I don't know if anyone else besides Tom Hanks could have played the character that well. Now, granted, I'm saying that because I saw him play the character and I loved it, and maybe someone else could have, but, like, it just feels like Tom Hanks is the right choice.
Yep. I'll agree with you on that one. No.
I did watch another movie, but I'm not going to talk about it. I want you to watch it. It's a documentary on Amazon Prime. Okay. If you've already seen it, I'll talk about it, but I don't know if you have. It's called I Am Big Bird, The Carol Spinney Story.
No, I have not seen it.
It actually came out in 2015, I want to say.
I remember. It's an older one, yeah.
Yeah. It's excellent.
Is it?
Again, more than once, I got emotional watching it.
I bet.
It was amazing. You really should watch it. I got all kinds of notes, but I'm not going to talk about any of them until... I think you should go watch it first.
All right.
Like, that's my hard sell for everybody, but sincerely, you should. It's an hour and a half. You should definitely go watch it.
Okay.
Here's what's amazing, because this documentary, I think it was released in 2015, was filmed in 2014, maybe something like that.
Okay.
Carol Spinney died this past December, mm-hmm. December 2019. He was 85. He played Big Bird till he was 84.
Wow.
He was in that Big Bird costume till he was 84 years old.
That's awesome.
Right?
That's right up there with Anthony Daniels still playing C-3PO. You know?
And they talked about, briefly, and I'll just mention this, like, retiring, and it's like, well, artists don't retire. Painters don't stop painting. They paint forever, you know? And mm-hmm. and he viewed what he did as being an artist. But you should go watch it. It's on net, it's on Amazon. It's Amazon Prime. It's well worth your time. It's well worth your time. And it's well worth, like, it's not a background anything you're going to want to watch in the background. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's well worth your time. That's all I got.
Well, my one movie wasn't nearly spiritual or wholesome like any of those.
Yeah.
I watched Jay and Silent Bob Reboot.
Okay.
God, Kevin Smith loves himself.
He does.
Few takeaway notes. There were some funny parts.
Yep.
There were some parts that I appreciated.
Yep.
I really liked the Ben Affleck, Joey...
Lauren Adams?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
That is the part that I got emotional about.
That was a beautiful part.
And that was like, I was like, I'm so happy this movie was made so we have that moment.
Yep. I legitimately really liked that. You know, yeah. when he basically broke it down and said, you know, no, we don't belong as a couple, but we are great friends and we made a great kid. And,
yeah.
You know.
And name the kid Amy.
Yep. Yep.
He's always chasing Amy. There's his Amy finally. Like that. I was so happy that movie was made for that one scene where we yep. get Holden McNeil and Joey Lauren Adams shows up and the whole thing. Oh, we're co-parents. What?
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, the theme running through this one, there were two themes. There was the funny theme about reboots.
Yeah.
And they made sure Brody made sure to explain to us in the beginning what the difference is between a reboot and a remake.
Yes.
A reboot is when you take something that everybody loved and you update it with more diversity and gender equality.
Yep.
So that a newer audience can appreciate it, but the older audience can too. A remake is when you take the original name and you don't care what people thought of it and you shit all over it and change everything and
yep.
do whatever you want with it.
Yep.
That's a remake.
Yep.
So it was nice to get that clarification, but there was the theme of the reboot and the remake and, you know, revisiting your past. And I guess there are three themes. There was that one. There was Kevin Smith sucks because he made a lot of jokes at his own expense. Everybody in there basically said how much they hated Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
Kevin Smith was there live and
as Kevin Smith. Yeah. Yep.
And most of the main characters are like, I fucking hate this guy. He's yeah. so full of himself. He loves him. Oh yeah. Of course his daughter's going to be in that movie because he has to put her in fucking everything.
But she's the one that makes that joke about herself.
Yeah.
yeah.
And then the third theme was fatherhood.
Yeah.
You know, it was fathers, daughters.
That was Jason Mewes' daughter, by the way, in that scene with, that's my Chasing Amy.
Oh, that was his. Okay.
That's music.
I was wondering
daughter.
How they
yep.
were going to. Yeah, that makes sense then. Yeah, so it was all about fathers and daughters and growing up and a lot of jokes. Some of them stuck, some of them did not.
Yeah.
They really. I'm sad they didn't get Shannon Doherty to show back up.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool.
And this was, I believe, when he was still fighting with Jeff Anderson. So
he was there.
Was he?
When they did the clerks
panel.
The clerks
right.
panel. He was in the clerks panel, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, even Veronica was in there.
Yeah, they were all in there, yeah. Scott Schaeffer was in there.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, all in all, I'm glad that I've watched it. I might watch it again, you know, to pick up on some of the jokes that I might have missed. Yeah. I thought that the moment that you were going to be really happy about when you had said that, and I was like, oh, I bet you I know what this is. I thought they were going to do some kind of tribute to George Carlin.
Oh, well, okay. His daughter was in it.
Oh, was she?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of how now. I meant to mention that, but I didn't want to. I forgot now. But yeah, she was in it.
I will say this too. The movie for me, like the beginning part, I fucking loved, especially the courtroom scene
yeah.
with Brandon St. Randy and Craig Robinson.
Yeah.
I love Joe Mangiello, like, chuckling at the I loved all of that. I was like, if this is the movie, I'm fucking sold.
Yep, yep.
By the time we got to the end, I fucking hated it.
Yeah.
Like the Asian girl that they brought along because she was a big fan and the whole time she was a Russian sleeper agent and
right.
it made no sense. It was hackney. Yeah. It was just, it was stupid. It was completely stupid. And then he comes in the Iron Man suit, and they're like, "Oh, Disney's going to sue him." And I kind of hope they do.
Right.
The joke about his wife, you know, being the manager of the movies, and, you know, she, "Oh, I just ate some vegan." Why? You met this guy off the street and you just took him in the bathroom and sucked his dick? Like, while you're on duty? I don't know. So
that allegedly happens? I don't know.
Overall, like I said, it wasn't bad. Yeah. You know, it was better than some of his other garbage. If you told me I could never watch it again, I would not be upset.
Right.
At least I didn't pay any money for it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, and I will also say this, because I forgot to say it earlier. I'm now 5 episodes into Picard and still fucking loving it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Probably check it out this week while I'm convalescing.
Cool.
All right, that's it. You can find me on Twitter. I'm Superstar Mel.
Quantum Geek, G3 through K.
That's the show. Get out.